Hi, welcome back to Agent Insider. I'm your host, Andy Jewell. Thanks for joining me today. Today, I have a guest with me, Sam Roth from ServiceMaster. Sam, thanks for taking some time to join me today.
Absolutely, Andy. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So you're in ServiceMaster is a fire and water restoration company, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Would be the easiest way to explain it. And you've been doing it for a while. You're second generation?
Yeah, second generation owner. My father started the business in 1991. And so I grew up obviously doing that. But I came on with the company around 2007, part-time and then, full-time probably in 2010 or so. And then he retired and moved on in 2020 and, I've been going ever since.
So you growing up with it, you started in 2007, which this is 2014. So what is that? 17 years ago or 2024? I said 2014. I'm living in the past.
Yep.
So 17 years ago, you started with the company, but obviously with your dad starting it in 91, kind of grow up with that in your blood.
Oh, for sure. So I have a lot of memories of, you know, visiting the San Juan Islands with him. You know, going to crawl spaces, pulling insulation out, you know, things like that.
Good family bonding.
Yeah,
crawl
for sure.
Under there and pull out that dirty insulation.
Yeah, I have a distinct memory of him. We went, took a ferry out, you know, and I think it was a Saturday or something like that. And he goes, hey, okay, so you hop in there, you get that wet insulation and I'll talk to the customer upstairs. And I don't know that I could have been more than like 12 or 13 at the time. So yeah, definitely grew up in it. You know, there's a lot of hard work involved in that, in the industry. And that really shaped, you know, I think who I am as well. So it's been really good and very thankful for it for sure.
Yeah. No, it is a ton of hard work. I have a lot more appreciation for what you guys do. So we had that big flood in our area in 2021 out in Sumas and Everson, Nooksack.
Yeah.
And, there was a ton of homes that were damaged. You guys were running around with your hair on fire constantly and every other restoration company. And there was some people that didn't have flood insurance and so they didn't have the funds necessarily to even pay for the restoration that they needed. And there was a few people that I knew and I was going around kind of helping out, crawling under those houses and pulling out that wet, nasty insulation, bagging it up and dragging it out from under the house to throw it away. I was like, I'm so thankful ServiceMaster exists. I would never want to do this again.
No, you know, our guys do that literally every day. And you know, eventually as you do it often, it gets easier and it becomes part of the deal. You know, it's way easier for me to go under a customer's crawl space than my own, as well.
Right.
I dread going under my own. I could care less and be happy to go do it for a customer. Which is kind of funny how that works out. But, so it's, there's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of gross, you know, that we see, you know, water and fire damage is the key, you know, the bulk of it, but we do a lot of mold work, which is a byproduct of water. And then a subset of water would be, you know, sewage and things like that. You know, we do a lot of sewage and crawl spaces. So you end up, you know, mucking out, all this sewage, in a confined space. So, you know, everybody's, you know, fully decked out and, you know, PPE and things like that. That brings another layer of into it.
Another layer of being uncomfortable.
Yes.
So, well, I kind of wanted to start with that because a lot of people don't know what to expect. So people don't, you do it every day.
Sure.
I've done it once, but most people don't experience water losses. And we'll start with water losses. Most people don't experience a water loss very often. Right. Hopefully it's something they deal with maybe once in their life. So what should somebody expect from a restoration company when they have a water loss? So my hot water tank blows up. Mm-hmm. I got water everywhere.
Yep.
How soon should I contact somebody and what should I expect as kind of the beginning?
Yeah. We'll take a step back real quick. So, cause everybody thinks it's going to happen to somebody else, never to them.
Right.
But the statistics say that one out of every 50 homes has a water loss a year.
Wow.
And so, from a market research standpoint, that's what the industry would say, right? So, you're right. It really does fall into once a lifetime typically. Although we unfortunately have repeat customers that know us well, just cause something goes wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the repeat client.
No, you don't want to have Sam on speed dial.
No, you don't. But, in the off chance that you do, we're here, but, so it does happen pretty regularly. but going to, you know, what you should expect, you know, when a water loss happens, you know, time is of the essence. So, you know, the deadly M word, the mold word, we call it the M word around the office because it's a, you know, it's a dirty word. But, if you're dealing with a recent water loss, let's say it's a clean water source, you know, like a fridge supply line gives way. That's a common one, right? Or, a sink supply line, the line that runs between the wall and the sink itself, things like that fail on a regular basis. And that's really where the bulk of our jobs come from, or our work comes from, is just appliances, fixtures, pipes failing in houses. It's not usually a weather driven event. That's what everybody expects. You know, they say in the wintertime, you know, around here specifically in Whatcom County, you know, you get the freeze and things like that, and pipes freeze and burst. That certainly is a large boost of work and jobs in the county, but the day to day is just simply appliances giving away. You know, washing machine overflows, dishwasher overflows, all those things happen on a daily basis. So,
you know, what's interesting, just to tag on to what you're saying there, is we just had a call with our property manager and claims manager, and they said nationwide, this is not unique to Washington, but nationwide, the largest driving force of insurance cost right now is exactly what you just said, non-weather water claims.
Yeah.
And it's, I tell people that, like, you should really, like you said, I'll go under a customer's crawl space. I don't want to go under mine. Mm-hmm. I tell everyone, you should really go in your crawl space and in your attic twice a year, because those people think, like, hey, it's set up, it should never have a problem, right?
Yeah.
But everything has a life expectancy, and things fail outside of a life expectancy. Mm-hmm. You can't just drive your car forever without changing oil and doing maintenance. Like, it's the same thing with your house. If you don't do maintenance, you're going to have these claims.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think you see that a lot. You know, the most common one is the old water heater. You know, I actually took a call. I was on call myself last night with our team, and we had a client call in, whose water heater had failed. You know, his exact words were, yeah, it was pretty old. It was time for it to go anyways. And now his basement's flooded out, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so we've got crews dispatched and taking care of that, you know, I think as we speak. So, yeah, there is a life expectancy on everything. And part of being a homeowner, business owner is paying attention to those things, but they can easily be missed.
Right.
But also it just stuff fails, you know. You know, the plastic mold to fix, you know, to put that fitting together could have had a hairline crack that was fine until it wasn't.
Right.
And, you know, there can be corrosion inside copper pipes for various reasons. And that can cause pinhole leaks, and, you know, a renovation, residing your house could hit a water line, or, you know, it's all these things can happen. So it's not necessarily all, old appliances, but, you know, a large portion of it is, for sure. So
go back to that scenario then. So we have the water damage from a leaking supply line, or the customer that you spoke with last night, that big hot water tank blow. Time is the essence, to avoid the four letter word.
Mm-hmm. So what we do is, or in the industry would also say that 2 to 4 hours is your window of time that you need to be on site with that client sucking water out of the house. And not all water losses involve standing water. A lot of times that will settle, you know, even in a half an hour or something like that. But there are scenarios, you know, there's a large gamut in water damage, right? So, it could be as simple as, you know, the supply line underneath the sink breaks while you're doing dishes, you see it spraying everywhere. You get the water shut off within, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. There's still going to be damage from that. There's still going to be probably flooring that's damaged, potentially some cabinets, things of that nature. But it's probably fairly regulated to the kitchen. On the other side of that, I've been to houses where they're brooming water out the front door as I pull in to the house. Oh. So that's a whole different scenario, whole different problem set. And then there's stuff in between, right? You know, so you have the supply line on the small level, but on like an epic crazy level, you know, we've been to houses where, we walk in and there's every color of the mold rainbow on the walls, 'cause a hot water line had a pinhole leak for months, like a month and a half, and just misting through this house. And hot water causes damage a lot faster than cold water does. And to the point where you could touch the walls and they'd crumble and fall apart.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a large range there, but, for a generic, you know, smaller water damage, project or claim or whatever you want to call them, time is of the essence because you do want to get the water out as fast as possible. So when we look at water damage, we're looking at loose water, and that's what we're looking to get out right away. And then bound water is what we're trying to remove from the actual structural wood. So part of that would be, so loose water we're getting out using extraction equipment. So all of our trucks come equipped with extractors, whether they're built into the truck, like running on a PTO system, or they could be a portable extractor. All of our trucks always come with those so that we can get that loose water out right away and immediately. And that prevents further damage from occurring. So that's stopping the spread of water. And then once that's dealt with, we set drying equipment, which would be like dehumidifiers and fans to promote a faster drying environment. Because what we're doing in people's houses is we're causing artificial evaporation to occur. So similar to the world around us, right? We're not doing anything special, but we're making everything happen in a faster rate of speed. Mm. And we're controlling that process as well. So if we can get there, you know, let's say that using that example of the supply line while you're there at home, if we can get in there right away, and maybe there's some laminate floor or some click together like LVP type floor, that's a really popular flooring choice these days. If we can get in there very quickly and remove that floor fast, get to that subfloor, get it drying. I mean, you could have a turnaround in 3 or 4 days of a dry out. And then there's the repair process that comes along with it afterwards. That takes a little bit longer typically to get source materials, you know, get estimates approved through insurance carriers if that's the way you're going. But that front end work can be done very quickly. When the water is allowed to sit and stay in the wood and become bound, that's when it takes a lot longer for it to be removed from the home.
Right. When it soaks in, it's going to be a lot harder to dry it out.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Versus it's sitting on the top.
Exactly. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they show up, so like 2 to 4 hours, it happens. I go, oh crap. I call someone. And now this is the part that I guess a lot of people don't think about, which they should, mm-hmm. is, you know, it happens at, you know, 8 o'clock at night, typically, probably yep. A lot of them are in the evening. And so their first instinct is to call me, the insurance agent. But I'm off, right? Sure. We're not at home. Mm-hmm. So they really do need to have I guess the onus would be like, as an insurance agent, I need to make sure I'm telling people like, hey, make sure you have Service Master's phone number.
Yeah.
Make sure you have Sam available. So that way when something happens, they call you
yep.
at 8 o'clock at night mm-hmm. and you guys respond.
Yeah.
And then you show up or your guys show up.
Mm-hmm.
Do they give me a scope and cost right away before the work starts? Or is it something like where they're like, hey, we show up, we start work, then we'll tell you what it's going to cost?
Yeah. So there's a variation there between small and large water losses, right? So if you have a small water loss, like the kitchen example, given construction costs and things like that, honestly, I would say the vast majority of water damage claims are insurance related events. That said, though, I think we've had a conversation about this in the past where, with the changes in the insurance industry, that might shift a little bit. But we're flexible either way for our customers. So what we do to address that is, if we show up and the whole house is flooded out, there's probably not a lot of need for an estimate at that point. It's like, right. Hey, let's get the water out. Let's set drying equipment to stabilize this thing. And then, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, we're going to be on the phone with, yourself as the agent or the insurance adjuster if the claim has already been filed to discuss scope of work. But from a pure cost standpoint, we use a program called Xactimate. And Xactimate is an agreed pricing program that is a third party independent of the insurance industry, as well as the restoration industry. And it kind of exists in this gap that goes in between. And so they're basically taking market conditions and adjusting price lists based on zip codes. So for example, like a, our company, we work from the Canadian border to, you know, the south end of Snohomish County, and we have multiple price lists in between because according to this program, there's varying market conditions. Like, for example, the Everett area is different than, say, Linden or something like that, right? And so our pricing varies because it works off of that price list. The benefit to the consumer and to your clients, for example, is that we're going to work on that pricing, and that changes on a monthly basis as well. So what that benefit is that when we're using that appropriately, and we do, the insurance company has confidence that they're going to get an appropriate cost in the end. It removes a lot of the back and forth fighting and things like that that can happen in the industry. Now, if it's a smaller water loss that you're like, man, I don't know if I should cover this out of pocket or what have you. I have coordinators that are on call all the time, along with lead technicians and project managers. So we have this suite of team members that are always on call all the time. So our job coordinators are on call to write an estimate. So our lead technician or project manager will arrive on site, assess the damage, and come up with a preliminary scope of work, and then can create an estimate based on that, very quickly. And that the addition of that project coordinator on call really came out of necessity from what you're talking about of wanting to, be able to provide an estimate very quickly to a client. Now that in water damage, it's not like construction where I can look at it and say, okay, this is our scope of work. And even construction, it's hard to do that too sometimes, because as you get into things or remodel, right, it's the scope changes. Like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, there's blocking missing inside this wall. We couldn't see it because the wall wasn't open yet. Same thing with water damage. We'll address where the water's at. We use tools to try to figure it out. But sometimes water does weird things too. So we do our best, you know, a good faith estimate for what it's going to take to get it dry. And then, you know, we can provide that very quickly. So we can provide it same night if needed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, that is something we've talked about that in general. I've been having that conversation with my customers because mm-hmm. the insurance industry is in such a strange place, right? The non-weather related water is a huge issue. Property rates are going up at a fairly steep incline.
Yeah.
And it's shocking a lot of people as renewals are coming through. And we have this discussion pretty regularly mm-hmm. right now. I'll walk up front and I'll hear three or four of my people are all having the same conversation with different customers.
Yeah.
And we even have customers who come to us from other agencies thinking that their agent's feeding them a line, right? Like, oh, you're just trying to buy a new boat. That's why my rates went up. And it's like, no, it's really not. This is something there's a lot of pressure in the industry. The cost of claims, the frequency of claims, all these things are just driving rates. And so one of the things that we're talking to customers about is like, hey, you should carry a higher deductible on your home, and you should be prepared to spend at least $5,000 in the event of a claim, and you shouldn't turn it in. Mm-hmm. If it's in that $5,000 ballpark, you should take care of it. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a, traditionally it was like, hey, if it's over $1,500, $2,000, we're turning it into the insurance company. Well, that's, everything is over $1,500 now, right? Like, so really $1,500, $5,000 is the new $1,500. I just did something for inflation once. I think talked about this on a prior episode, is the deductibles of $1,000 is common when I got into the industry 19 years ago. And if you adjust that for inflation from 19 years ago, it's about $2,000. Mm-hmm. People still carry $1,000 deductibles, but really $2,000 is the equivalent of $1,000 from 20 years ago. So it's the same thing on claims. Like, you should be talking to the restoration company when they come out, asking those questions like, hey, if you haven't opened a claim, if you've opened the claim, then just let it run its process.
Yeah.
But if you haven't opened the claim and you go, hey, it looks like a small deal, you get the restoration company out there, get that, you know, good, like you said, good faith, because the problem is that you don't know until you start getting into it.
Yeah.
You can say, hey, 90% of the time it's going to be this. And if it's in that $5,000 range, you should probably think about just paying it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And there's two phases to it too, right? To keep in mind is, you know, we're on the front end of this. So we come in and, we'll do the dry out portion, but oftentimes there's materials, especially in newer homes today, that aren't salvageable. So a popular one is LVP flooring or sheet vinyl flooring. And where we used to see a lot of carpet and that could be dried in place and salvaged, you know, a large percentage of the time, especially in a freshwater leak, type situation, we can clean it, and it can be salvaged and, you know, it's all good. With LVP, water is getting around it and getting underneath and getting into the subfloor that way. And the way to dry that subfloor out is to remove the LVP. And so unfortunately now you're removing that flooring, right? And so if you look at costs per square foot on the, you know, the repair portion of it, so, you know, your install cost as well as your material cost and, you know, insurance is designed to put you back to where you were before the loss happened. So, you know, if you had a budget of, let's say, $4 or $5 a foot for the LVP floor, and then, you know, a couple dollars a foot for install or whatever that looks like. I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, but just guesses. Now, all of a sudden, if you had, you know, if you have a continuous flooring is the mm-hmm. current trend, right? I mean, if you go to any new houses or walk through an open house, you know, new homes are being built with the main level of the house and the main living area all the same flooring, right?
And right. So it runs all the way through.
And in a water loss, typically painting's a component of it as well. So, it's really easy for the stuff to spiral is not the right word, but a little bit of water can go a long ways. Yeah. Right. And it can become, you know, might've just been a small leak in the kitchen, but, because those materials are continuous, it's affecting the whole main level of the home. Right. And so that we see that happen a lot where, yeah, the water damage was small, but the scope of repairs are fairly large to bring it back to where it was beforehand.
Right.
And so if you were wanting to not, using that kitchen example, wanting to not go down that road, you could get creative and maybe do some tile in that kitchen or something else to save the rest of the house. But by and large, folks are wanting just to replace it all and put it back, and that can be expensive. So,
shift gears just a little bit. Fire or smoke damage.
Yeah.
How does that differ in the response of a restoration company, mm-hmm. or in my response as I'm not worried about the mold, mm-hmm. so we take that out of the equation. Mm-hmm. But as the homeowner, how should I respond differently, and what should I expect from the restoration company?
Yeah. So you're not dealing with mold unless the fire department came and sprayed the house down. That's significant fire at that point. So, yep. Just like in water, fires have different degrees of severity, right? So, you know, if you're looking at a house that's got and we walk into these all the time, unfortunately, that, the fire is so significant that it burnt through the ceiling and the roof is missing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is now a total loss inventory of contents and the structure is, gutted to studs and that sort of thing. And so I don't think we really want to talk that one because there's not a lot you can do at that point other than remove valuables and talk to the restoration company about getting specific items cleaned. But unfortunately in those situations, that's such a devastating, situation that quick response and getting on it with the restoration company is really important. But is there anything you're going to do in 2 to 4 hour period of time? Probably not, you know, yeah. but the process should be started as quick as possible. In that, just because you're going to get back together faster, and then you have a roadmap mentally to know where you're going. Because in all of these situations, it's a significant event in your life to have people come into your home, you know, especially in a fire. In the fire department's in your home, and that's hard on people. It just is. So, yep. So that's a factor that you can't leave out of all this. But going back to like a smaller fire, soot gets through everything. So you could have a kitchen fire where we call them protein because let's say that you're cooking a chicken on the stove or something like that, or beans or just whatever it is, it gets forgotten and it burns down. There's probably no like physical scorching or like flames that have physically damaged anything, but now you have soot throughout the whole house. And so the short term importance is having a restoration company out that can walk through and explain the do's and don'ts in that situation. And so one of those is touching the walls with your bare hands, because you have oils on your hands, and that actually impacts that soot and drives it into the wall and makes it harder to clean afterwards. So it's important not to touch anything really at that point. Walking on flooring. So if you have white carpet in your house and you have soot all over it and everybody's tracking and walking through it, that's just grinding that soot down into the fibers of that carpet, and making it less and less likely to be able to be restored. So almost it's better to not touch, step back, call, get somebody out. We'd love to come help in that scenario and walk the client through, okay, this is where you're at, create a scope of work. And that involves, we use specific sponges that are designed to pick up soot, all types of soot, because there is multiple types of soot. For example, you can have like a wood fire soot that actually isn't as black as you would think. It's got more of a white to it, or a grayish color when it comes off. And then you have protein, which is not quite as visible. And then, you can have a plastics, which is super dark black soot, and it also has the worst odor to it as well. Protein has a horrible odor as well, not quite as visible. And then wood smoke is kind of has a gray color. It almost looks like dust as well. So it takes somebody that knows what they're looking at to be able to see that for you. Because the downstream effect of not dealing with it properly is odor that continues
that you never really get rid of.
You never get rid of it. Yeah. Because everything is involved in that scenario. So if you think about a kitchen fire, and let's say that you open up the windows to air everything out and you open up your master suite that's on the other side of the house, that smoke's going to transfer all the way through and be drawn through the master suite. So now you have soot that while it started in the kitchen is now all the way through, and is in all the surfaces.
Don't turn on the furnace.
Exactly. That's another one, right? But yes, you do need to get the smoke out, and nobody thinks about that at the time. If I had a fire in my house, I might think about it, but to be honest, more interested in getting the smoke out of the house first.
Trying to clear the smoke out.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what spreads that soot all over.
It is. Yeah. So, but for short term, not touching anything is important. If it's a plastics fire, or there's fire extinguisher dust involved, those are corrosives. And so those can damage electronics. So there's a short term issue of, or metals as well. So we'll do an emergency, like stabilization clean as well, which deals with anything that might corrode, or gets electronics out, gets them to an electronics restoration vendor very quickly. Another one is especially if you're not able to be in the house, is clothing. So we work with textile vendors that will come in and do emergency cleans on, a select number of clothing, get those turned around very quickly for the client, so that if they have to stay in a hotel, they can at least have a set of clean clothes, the next day or following days, so that they don't have to go rebuy their wardrobe right away. And then the rest of it can kind of come as it needs to. And every situation is different as well, of course. But those are some of the emergency based services, and then board up as well. If the fire is bad enough, unfortunately there are some bad actors around that will rob fires. We had a fire in Mill Creek that was robbed like 5 times.
Wow.
And so we would show up every day and somebody had been in there overnight. They literally ripped off the boards from the board up that the construction company did, and got into the house again and again and again and again. So there's that aspect of things as well to be thinking about.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about. And I think a lot of people don't think about that. Like, I would never do that, but there's a lot of people that do.
So you and me both. But if it hits the news, that's a factor for sure.
Right.
So
then all of a sudden people know that there's...
Yeah, they may not be living there. Yeah, property that may be empty, maybe easier to get access to.
Looking for valuables and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are some of the red flags? Cause there's a lot of different, restoration companies, and I've worked with quite a few of the restoration companies in the area, and some are better than others.
Sure.
What are some of the red flags if I'm a homeowner, mm-hmm. I have a restoration company that I'm going to work with and they're going to come in, that I should be looking for to go, hey, wait a minute, maybe this isn't the company for me?
Yeah. I think that on that first visit, education is really important. And if you have somebody in your house that's not willing to explain why they're doing what they're doing or doesn't want to, I think that's a red flag. All of our teams are trained to educate our homeowners on what and why we're doing what we're doing, if they want to know, right? We're not going to sit there and explain every little thing if they don't want to know. But if they do want to know, we're happy to, you know, for math class, show your work.
Right.
And we're happy to show how we got to the conclusion we did, because it's really important, because every decision that's made on the front end on those first few visits to the house, especially that scoping initial visit, really set the trajectory for that damage all the way through. And that's incredibly important to get the right company in there that has the right value set for you. So education is really important. So as long as that vendor is in there and explaining what and why and how, and they should be able to do that in a way that makes sense to you as a homeowner, you know, that's a key factor, because if they can't explain how and why, you know, that leads me to wonder, do they even know what they're doing? You know, is there enough education and training there to be making the calls that need to be made for likely your biggest asset in life? And then additionally, that that helps to get to the bottom of what the motivation is. You know, we see, you know, we're spanning all the way down to Everett, right? So we see a lot of different restoration companies, and we go in behind a lot of them as, you know, just a second check work. You know, usually it's adjusters. They'll ask us, go do that. Just like, hey, the scope of work doesn't seem quite right. Can you just go look at it for me? We do a lot of that work, or a lot of those inspections for, you know, adjusters that refer us a lot of work. And a lot of times, you know, the homeowner's like, I don't understand why, you know, X, Y, and Z happened. I don't understand. And we see companies come in with the intention of doing a large remodel. Unfortunately, and that might fit the value set of that customer, but potentially that might not line up with what you're looking for too, right? So
might be overselling the job.
Might be overselling a little bit, yeah. So that's why I say that education piece is really important, because that allows you to understand the how and the why behind what they're wanting to do. And then you can make a good decision what's best for your family from
right.
there. So
right. So really, when I'm working with a restoration company, I should probably be asking a few questions about, hey, what are we doing? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't need to ask questions about, you know, every piece of equipment, every sure. process, but kind of get some general ideas of
yeah.
to see
yeah.
if they know why they're doing what they're doing,
or do they
just do the same thing to every sure. Instance. And yeah. it's like, well, maybe it needs it. Maybe it yeah. doesn't.
A good, especially when you're dealing with materials that are harder to replace. So let's say kitchen cabinets, for example. If somebody wants to remove the kitchen cabinets or the continuous flooring or, you know, a lot of drywall, the question should at least be asked, well, why do we need to take those cabinets out? Because I know from the back side of things, you could be 3 or 4 months out from cabinets. So just by taking those cabinets out down the road, you're setting yourself up for 3 or 4 months once everything's figured out to even get those cabinets in and get them installed. Doesn't mean you can't do other work in the process, but you're without a kitchen for that period of time. And, most people don't understand that going into it before they right. agree to it. Now that said, I caveat that with oftentimes those cabinets absolutely need to come out. We take cabinets out all the time. Unfortunately, we wish we didn't have to, but, if water's behind that, or it's an overhead water loss and they're on an exterior wall and the water ran down that exterior wall and soaked that insulation in the back behind there, those cabinets got to come out to get that wet insulation, or it's right. a sewage loss. And you've got raw sewage behind there. It's got to come out, you know, mold behind the cabinets got to come out. So there's so many situations where cabinets specifically do need to come out, but if you have a drying company or a restoration company that can creatively dry, find ways to dry things well without damaging them to the point of no return, and using specialty type equipment to do so, like air injection machines, like desiccant dehumidification and things like that. There's creative ways to dry things. At some point though, there's diminishing returns, and that's where it needs to be just taken out.
Right.
But those are areas that I see, impact the claim down the road. So
what about certifications for a restoration company? Do you guys have special certifications? Are there things that I should be aware of that I should be like, hey, do you guys have this some baseline stuff?
Yeah. So start specifically to the industry and then kind of step back. Specifically in the industry, the IICRC is the governing body that surrounds the water and fire damage restoration industry. It also deals with carpet cleaning, trauma cleaning, and some other types of cleaning as well. But the firm should be certified, firm meaning the company, should be certified with the IICRC. And then, at least the folks that are making decisions should also have certifications as well, beyond that. So, for example, all of our water damage technicians and leads will all be certified through the IICRC. And then obviously all your management would need to have that as well. And then the folks that are doing your fire and odor cleaning, all those technicians and team leads should also be certified in that area, because it gives you the science behind and the why behind what you're doing. We do a lot of internal training as well, before they'll go to those classes, right? Because my thought process on industry training is it's really important to do, but I want them to be in that job for a little while, working underneath of a journeyman individual for a little while, because now they go and they get that aha, oh, that's the science behind what I've been doing. I've been following the lead of the guy that's been, or the gal that's been teaching me and guiding these jobs. Now I had this light bulb moment, and it's wonderful. Right. We just had two of our guys come back from Memphis, from a training facility there just 3 weeks ago. And they've been working under other folks, and they had a lot of those aha light bulb moments, like, oh yeah. And they're stoked and excited to keep, perfecting their craft.
It kind of makes sense in a way if you think about it, because having worked in the field, right? You're doing stuff and you're like, I don't know why we're doing this, or maybe not understanding the why behind it, but you know you're doing it.
Yep.
And then you go to the class and you go, okay, I saw what we did and I understand what we did, and now I understand the why.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And the certifications are important. Internal training regimen is really important as well. And we do that internally, where we have a whole process that walks through. I get to do a lot of the teaching myself, which I really enjoy doing. And it's a lot of fun because we'll walk through, various aspects. So within water damage, there's science behind it. We talked about that evaporation process earlier, but going in depth of, what is the temperature? What is the relative humidity? What is the grains per pound? What do those mean, and how do they matter in the drying process? And how do we deal with loose water versus bound water? And how do we creatively dry different things? How do we incorporate heat and cooling in some cases to the drying process to get the most efficient result possible? And in the end, the benefit to that is the client, because they get the most, you mentioned it's a one size fits all kind of thing. That doesn't serve the client well.
Right.
What serves a client well is a very well-trained technician that comes and is able to use all these tools in their arsenal, all the equipment that has been invested in to tailor to the house, tailor to the business, whatever it might be, and take really good care of them. So that's the IICRC certifications. Washington State specifically, asbestos is a big deal. There should be people involved in the company that understand asbestos testing, and either can call for an outside testing company to come do it. There's various materials that are regulated by the state, that are, Washington State regulates asbestos at a higher level than it is nationally. And those are common materials that are removed in the drying out process. So various types of flooring, various types of wall coverings, things like that.
So are you guys able to handle the asbestos problem then?
Yeah. So we internally will test for asbestos. So we have a lot of folks, including myself, that are AHRA certified as the certification. And so that allows us to test for asbestos. And then we have subcontractors that actually do abatement. We don't do the actual abatement in house. We okay. subcontract that out. But that's managed and run through us as well. So, cause we'll take that scope of work and, let's say that there was flood cuts needed, which is basically removing like the bottom 2 or 4 feet of the drywall wall in a room, say the drywall contained asbestos or sheet vinyl or something like that. We'll go prep it all. We'll mark it all out for the abatement company. So they come in, do specifically what we need them to do, and then, go on from there,
which I'm sure would help a ton in the cost of the abatement.
It does. Yeah. Because we're defining that scope of work.
Right.
Additionally, we'll take care of, we do, you know, our company, we specifically go to bat for our clients with the insurance companies as well. And not because the insurance company's out to get them, but simply to handle a lot of the paperwork and a lot of the approvals that maybe other companies won't necessarily do. And that's a pretty large value add.
It's a huge value add. When I talk with our adjusters mm-hmm. and they like working with you guys. And that's one of the things I talk about all the time is like, it's not because the adjuster, some adjusters are just jerks, but on the average, yeah. most adjusters are good, normal people.
Yes.
They just have to have proper documentation and they have to have a file that's in order because insurance companies get audited as well. Mm-hmm. And if we're not doing the same things the same way for everybody, we're going to get sued or we're going to get fined. And so they just need the proper information to document files so they can justify what they're doing.
Exactly.
It's not like, I think some people have this idea that an adjuster has a dollar amount that's been set for them to spend per claim and they're not going to go over it. End of story. It's not really the case. That would be, you get into tons of legal problems if they were to operate in that space. It's going to cost what it's going to cost. They just have to have, you can't just decide this is what it's going to cost.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all based on those market conditions.
Right.
And that Xactimate program that I mentioned, you know, most of the time it is accurate. Sometimes it's not. And as a company, we are really good at explaining to the adjusters, just like we do with the clients, you know, explanation's important. You know, browbeating's not helpful.
So no, it's not.
You know, going into those conversations.
Don't be a Karen.
There we go. Yeah, thanks.
So, yeah, I think that's an interesting thought, though, because we're just kind of talking about like the misconception of the adjuster. What do you find as the customer that the customers often have as a misconception of the process?
I see a couple of them. Starting with cashing a check. It's a very simple thing, right? So let's go to the scenario of you have a simple homeowner's water loss or fire. It doesn't matter what it is. Everybody's scared to cash that check because they've heard stories about liability claims where if you cash the check, that's all you got and yeah. you're stuck. Now, obviously I can't speak for every insurance company or every situation, but I think you would agree with me in that scenario where it's your insurance company, the product you're paying for, cashing that initial check does not mean the claim is over.
Right.
It's just not, that's not the case. So oftentimes I see people scared to cash a check. So they're like, oh, I'm agreeing to the final cut. That you're not agreeing to anything. You're just taking their first payment that they're probably just trying to get money in your hands so that you can start the process and you can hire a contractor to do the repairs once mitigation's complete. And, you know, all of those things. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just had this discussion with somebody the other day about that it is very different. So if you have a liability claim where, you know, use a car accident, mm-hmm. I hit you mm-hmm. and then for your injuries, for your damages, my insurance company's offering you $10,000.
Sure.
Now, if you take and say, yes, I accept that. And you take the check, you cash the check, before they give you that check, you're signing off. It's not just the check that you cashed. It's actually, you've signed off accepting that offer and releasing me from liability.
Yeah.
And so that payment is an exchange of you signing, saying, I'm not going to sue Andy. In the reverse, though, or the property damage that we're talking about, like you said, it's completely different. This is not a liability claim. This is your own insurance company paying to you for your property damage. And it's common in the industries, whether it's, you know, damage to your vehicle that your insurance company is paying to you, like you hit a deer, or it's your home, the insurance companies anticipate that there's going to be additional payments that will have to be made as more damage is discovered.
Yeah.
So I've never seen in the industry, not to say that there's not some weird insurance company out there that does this, but I've never seen in the industry any of the major carriers where once they write you a check for the beginning of your water damage, that now you're just done. You're screwed.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. You know, seeing, you know, we're just doing the claim side, right? And so we don't see that really happen.
Yeah.
Obviously the liability is completely different animal. And liability claims are hard to work on our end of things as well, because there is an open-ended piece, you know, and so we talked about that good faith estimate kind of starting our conversation off. But the fact that it is a good faith estimate, and, you know, as we just mentioned, insurance companies are paying more and more out as they, as more damage is found. So we try to be as accurate, and we try to go on the side of, we want to err on the higher side of things, not because we want to charge more to our customers, but we want to give them a worst case scenario. And a lot of times we don't get the job because of that, because I'm unwilling to come in too low and I don't want to go back to somebody and ask for more money. I'm like, you budgeted for this. Yeah, it was good faith, but I don't feel good about that. Right. That's not how I want to treat our clients. So, we've lost jobs because of that. And, I'm willing to do that because I want to treat our customers properly. And so, more often than not, we're able to come in underneath of what we estimated. Sometimes not, that's not the case. Sometimes, you know, for example, you could do an estimate and then do your asbestos testing and there's no way for it to know, but it pops positive for asbestos. Well, now that cost has changed, you know, where it might've been a couple $100 to remove the drywall. Now it's $3,000, you know, or something like that. So there's so many factors in there on the pricing end of things. To be able to know all that the first night at 8 o'clock at night is unrealistic.
Right.
But we can at least get you to a point where you feel confident that you have a company that cares about you, because through that estimating process, we're able to show who we are. We're able to show, hey, we're not out to get you. We're here to really help and serve you. And all of our technicians do that. So that's where that benefit lies.
So there's a lot of moving parts to restoration. What do you enjoy about this business?
Oh, I like helping people. I mean, that's really it at the end of the day. It's a dirty business. It's hard. There's a lot of hours that are involved. You know, when those floods in Sumas and Everson happened, we didn't see daylight for a long time. That was a long year. Those happened, I think, it was like November 13th or 15th or something like that, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the mitigation work, it kind of wrapped up by the end of the year. And then January or December 31st, January 1st, we got a cold snap. And we had frozen pipes. So our crews really worked in a catastrophe type mode from middle of November to like middle of March. And that's what we do. That's what we sign up to do. And we want to take care of our customers. But that's exhausting sometimes. And so all of our team members that have been with us the longest do this because they want to help people and serve people well. And as a business owner, my goal is to provide an environment that our team can do that on a regular basis, where they feel and they know that they can go out and serve people really well every day. And that's, so now my roles have shifted a little bit, right? Where I used to get to be on a truck every day and go work in the field and manage projects and things like that. I don't get to do that quite as much, just given the size and other responsibilities. So now my personal mission every day is to create an environment that our team can go out and serve our customers well. So removing all the barriers from them so they can take good care of clients. And I read our internal notes, you know, on a daily basis, and it's constant. You know, this person has this situation going on in their life. So be, you know, be careful around this thing specifically, or this heirloom is in this room, so be very cautious about that. Mm. And it's, we're, you know, by and large, these are young, most of the time, young men that are in people's houses, and they're leaving, you know, they're treating them like their grandmother, perhaps.
That's awesome. I was thinking about that as you were talking. The people that you have working for you, mm-hmm. for the most part, I'm, and because of who you are too, the leadership you provide, but they have to be people who are concerned about helping the people that are in distress, because crawling under a house and pulling out wet insulation, or, you know, cleaning up a sewage reverse flow, that sort of stuff. None of these things that you guys do are like fun, like, oh yay, I get to do this. Yeah. And people can go do other things, and sure. and they could go get other jobs. So it's not that it's like, well, I'm stuck here, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily that it's the best paying job available. But if you find reward in helping people and taking somebody who's having a really bad day, probably one of their lower points in life, mm-hmm. and being able to walk through that with them and fix it for them, and you get that rewarded feeling, like that's changes the type of person that's working with you.
Yeah. And that's key to us, you know, so finding the right people, you know, and that goes to our hiring process, that goes to our probationary period that we have, you know, as a company, all that's so key to that scenario. Right. Because, that's, you know, that's where we win and lose with our customers is the care for them.
Yeah.
You know, we have all the latest technology. We have, you know, thermal cameras on all the trucks, you know, the latest and greatest everything, really. I mean, we heavily invest in technology. We heavily invest in equipment, you know, vehicles, all the right things. But all that is just investments, but the investments in our team, the investments in training, those are what really, I think, would set us apart from others.
So in that thought process, from a business side, business management, what would you say is your biggest challenge in business?
You know, over the last few years, it's been finding those people that want to serve people well. You know, from an internal standpoint, that's been one of our biggest struggles. You know, we, as a company, have set it up so that somebody coming in can thrive and do really well. But you have to have the right people that want to do that, mm-hmm. in place. And so, at the moment, actually, we're almost fully staffed and in a fantastic position.
That's awesome.
Which is unique, right? In the industry in general, because there's a lot of burnout in restoration, in the restoration industry, but, we've proven that we can keep people a long time and give them careers and, do well. So, that's been an internal, it's always been a struggle, and it will continue to be forever. I don't think that's ever going to change.
No.
You know, cause the greatest asset to our company is our team. You know, we could fund all the equipment or whatever. It doesn't matter if we don't have fantastic people out there putting it into people's houses and knowing how to use it well. So that's, you know, that's one of, you know, the biggest hurdles. You know, the other one is the change in the insurance industry that we talked about a little bit. That's adjusting how we do things. It's adjusting how we've always done things. So as a company, we're moving and flexing and trying to learn how to do that better. One of our COOs actually in Chicago right now at a training. And one of the big points in that is addressing how are we going to flex as a company, in the changing industry? Mm-hmm. And what are some thoughts that others have found? And, you know, that's a service master, meeting. So we're investing in those things for down the road. Cause right now it hasn't changed exponentially, but like you said, people are just starting to get their renewals. Mm-hmm. And I got ours.
You're like, what?
Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to start to see that more and more throughout this year and then into next. But we did see that shift in, you know, that 2008 time. You know, the insurance industry lagged behind in that. And so we saw a change into 2010 or so on how people handled claims.
Yeah.
They didn't want to file a claim. They wanted to just deal with it themselves. So company had to flex then too. And we did. And so, I expect that's going to happen again, but that will be a, it will change the way we do things for sure.
Well, and that is the thing to remember, right? The only constant in life is change.
It's true.
And, I think about it, before I got into insurance, I worked for Wonder Bread. And, when they say the best thing since sliced bread, Wonder Bread was the first company to commercially slice bread. And so they were like cutting edge to say, hey, we're delivering bread to stores. We're slicing it. So every slice is the same size. You don't have to slice it at home. And the white Wonder Bread, that gooey white bread, was what people loved. And as things changed in the mid 2000s, early 2000s, like 2003, 2004, and people started buying oat breads and nut breads and whole grain and healthier bread, Wonder Bread was like, this is just a fad. And so they didn't adapt to it. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they tried to adapt, they were the last ones to the party.
Sure.
And they ended up going bankrupt. So they went from being like the standardized commercial bakery to going bankrupt. And then you think about Kodak. Kodak mm-hmm. was the first company that made personal photography available with cameras. They were pioneers in the film industry, pioneers in disposable cameras. Mm-hmm. And personal photography was Kodak's wheelhouse. Some of their researchers were actually the ones that helped to develop digital photography. Mm-hmm. But Kodak shelved that whole department because they're like, that's never going to happen. People like film. They want their 35 millimeter film. And that's the way we've always done it. That's the way it's going to be. And they filed bankruptcy because the digital cameras and the digital photography killed them. Mm-hmm. So I think in general, in businesses, we do something a certain way. And we've always done it that way. And to your point, right, you have to recognize in no matter what industry we're in, things are changing constantly. And we have to, as business owners, we have to stay attuned to where our industry is going and what's happening next. Because if we just think we're going to do it the same way we've done it for the last 20 years, sooner or later, we become irrelevant and we go bankrupt.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And the, you know, I mean, the technologies are changing too. You know, our drying software. So from a software standpoint and what we're doing now looks very different than it did 5 years ago.
Right.
And incredibly different. You know, it used to be, we would print out these Excel, it was created in Excel, but you know, all these cells within, you know, on a sheet, and it would have a room, and you know, these are the things that you're doing in the room, or these are the readings for the moisture content. And those are filled on a daily basis. And they're a paper file. And if you forgot your paper file for the day, you know, you're lost. And I forgot it occasionally,
yeah.
Very occasionally, of course, when I was on a truck.
Right.
Of course.
Rare,
super
once
rare.
Once or twice a year.
Yeah. What at most. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now it's a cloud-based app and our coordinators can get real-time data out of it. It's crazy that the apps are Bluetoothing to and a dehumidifier and pulling the readings off as you walk into the house.
Wow.
Like,
yeah,
totally cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's all cool. Technology changes. But what I've pushed back on and driven hard is that the technology is awesome, but I want our teams to be master restorers that utilize the technology to fit what we're trying, what needs to happen, not the other way around, not utilizing technology as a crutch to just get by.
Right.
I see a lot of companies doing that too.
Right. They become technology driven, and technology is a tool, but technology can't be in the driver's seat.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So while we embrace technology constantly, we don't want to forget where we came from as, I tell our guys, be drying Godzillas, like be fantastic, be the best that you possibly could ever be, because that's how we serve our customers well. And there's new technologies that have revolutionized things. Like there's one called DocuSketch, and there's other trade names for it, other companies that are doing it, but effectively it's creating a 3D model of your house. And what we're doing is before as we arrive on sites, we call that the before. So that's the initial walkthrough, and it's very quick and easy. It's just, it's a stand like a tripod, and it's a small camera that just clips on the top, and it's an app, and you just click your way through the house, and you're getting 360 degree cameras all the way through. And then, after that, it's creating a a model that drops right into Xactimate, and the workflow and the information flows so fast, and you're getting these measurements with the LiDAR radar that it's using that are accurate down to like half an inch.
Wow.
And it's just so accurate, so fast, so efficient. And then we're able to send that to the insurance company adjusters, so they're able to get a better understanding of what their customer's going through. And if they choose to be, they can be more empathetic with their client.
Right.
But we're providing them the tools to do that, right? So we have adjusters that are calling us like, hey, can you go out there, make sure you send me that DocuSketch link as soon as you get it, because they want to see it, right?
Right?
And then they can have a better conversation with their customer and say, okay, so I see, you know, because you can literally have it on your screen in front of you because it's desktop-based as well as the app, and it's all integrates That's really cool. nicely. But they can sit at their computer and say, oh, I see that. You know, the trim is swollen near the kitchen cabinet. I understand that, ma'am. Yes, we'll take care of that for you. No problem.
Yeah.
Or I can see that there was water everywhere because our guys are trained to do that as quick as possible when they arrive on site. While we're still doing work and we're still doing extraction, they're doing that process. And then we're doing if there's demolition that's actually needed, we'll do a post-demo DocuSketch as well so that it paints a really nice picture and we can hand that over to the adjuster as well. And it helps us with accuracy with our measurements and things like that. So all the way around, it's a win.
Yeah.
And so that's just one area of technology that's changing, as well as, I mean, there's so many others, but that's one.
No,
of them.
Technology. People tend to demonize technology, mm-hmm. or they think technology replaces people. But I think to your point, kind of what I said before, I think technology is an amazing tool, and that mm-hmm. we can do things like that that we couldn't do 10 sure. years ago, 5 years ago, three yeah. years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
But the technology partnered with people gives us the ability to do great things. If you make people try to take people out of the equation and just replace it all with technology, it becomes very cold, mm-hmm. very analytical, and not a great experience. And if you don't give technology to the people that are trying to do it, they are operating with a hand tied behind their back. So
yeah.
Last question. I didn't give you this question ahead of time, and I never do. but I think it's a cool question. And I always love the way, just to kind of see how people respond. If you, because you have kids, mm-hmm. So something that you would want your children to know, or your grandchildren, you're like, one thing that I get a pass on for them to know, whether it's related to restoration, business, life, whatever, the most important thing that you would want to pass on to your kids and your grandkids, what would that be?
That's a great question. How about I keep it business related?
Sure.
In this scenario. I think the greatest thing that you can do in business is recognize that your team that surrounds you is the most important thing mm-hmm. that you can do. And especially in a leadership type scenario, and that can be, you know, utilized throughout life. But the longer I spend, the more time I spend in my role, the more I'm convinced that having a team that surrounds you, that shares the values and the goals that you're all working towards, anything becomes possible at that point. Mm. Funding comes and goes, jobs come and go, good times come and go, but having that core team that surrounds you and always has your back is probably the most important thing. So you have a level of confidence to go out and serve people well when you know you have somebody has your back right behind you, right? So I think that, you know, from a pure, you know, business standpoint, I think that's probably the most important. That's one thing I would love to pass along. My kids yeah. and grandkids.
Yeah. I think that is so key, is team. If you have a good team, around you, you're going to enjoy what you're doing. They're going to enjoy what they're doing, and you're going to be so effective in what you're doing. You're going to be the best.
Yeah.
And you drive each other to build and to grow. And really, cause a team recognizes it's not about one person. It's about mm-hmm. all of us working together towards one goal.
Yeah.
And I think that that definitely in a business scenario, people make it about themselves and they devalue the team. And you see, when you get somebody toxic in a team, everybody in the team hates it. Mm-hmm. And when that person leaves, everybody just goes, we're back to good life now. So it is the culture of the team that you build is so important. Yeah. So kind of just to recap, because we've talked about a lot of things.
Sure.
To recap, tell me if I'm off on this. If I got a water loss, 2 to 4 hours, key window of getting that mitigation process started to avoid the four letter word mold.
The mold can grow, and they say 48 to 72 hours somewhere in that window. So 2 to 4 hours is the industry expectation from receiving a new call to be on site. So,
We're not going to mitigate it in 2 to 4 hours, but we need to start that process right away to avoid the mold growth.
Yeah.
And then the fire smoke damage, we're going to talk about smoke damage. Cause like you said, if it's a major fire, the roof is gone. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot we're going to do, but other than start a big process that sucks. So smoke damage, we burn something on the stove or whatever. The fireplace flue wasn't open. It smokes out our house. We want to not touch walls. Mm-hmm. Don't touch things. Don't walk across carpet as little as possible. Don't turn on a furnace.
Yeah.
Get somebody out there as soon as possible again to start soaking up and pulling out that soot so it doesn't get ground in, soaked into things. Because if it gets in there, it's going to be difficult to get the smell out.
Yeah.
And then make sure that we're working with reputable companies, companies that want to explain what they're doing and are willing to explain what they're doing and why they're doing it. If somebody's hiding behind a veil, this is what we do because we're experts and just trust us and go away. Mm-hmm. Probably they don't know what they're doing as much as they're wanting to portray that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they should be certified. They should have some certifications that they've gone through training. Just because they decided they want to be a fire or water restoration company doesn't mean they actually know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that they care, right? Mm-hmm. Like they have that heart of like, hey, I just want to be here to help you to fix this. That's going to be transparent with you. Like, hey, this is our best estimate, but obviously there's going to be things that could come out.
Sure.
And so I think those are the big key takeaways for somebody. And then me looking for people who are part of teams that are passionate about excellence and passionate about service and passionate about helping people. Cause if they're in it for the money, and they're not working with you, not working with your insurance adjuster or trying to drive wedges, like, well, your insurance adjuster just being cheap. The problem is it's probably not the insurance adjuster being cheap. There's some adjusters out there like that, but it's probably that they're not providing the proper information to the adjuster for him to be able to make payments. So recognize they're all working as a team, your adjuster, your agent, your restoration company should all be working together to get you fixed. And if you feel like somebody's not working well with everybody else, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And that last point about working together as a team, I have an entire division in our company. We call it our coordinating team that literally exists to back end coordinate everything with the insurance carrier, with the adjuster, with our field crews, and make sure data's passed in all the places at a ridiculously high rate of speed. So for example, with Farmers, for example, within 12 to 24 hours of being on site, Farmers has a scope of work document in their inbox in a third party timestamped program, that Xactmate program. They have a portal as well that, we talk to Farmers directly through. It's all connected. And that's all happening super fast.
Yeah.
So, being part of that industry and, one last thing I would say about just that in general is that, Service Master across the board and us as well, specifically to your clients, we have a corporate relationship with Farmers that dates a long time.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, understanding on a corporate level, even beyond just the two of us, right? That's really beneficial to a Farmers customer. And it's something that they can certainly take advantage of because all those back end systems have been set up in a way and there's already the level of trust that's present, to make things go better. So
it does make it a lot simpler in the event of a claim when they're working with, a partner of ours.
An established vendor, right?
Yeah.
Payments are easy. There's less, it's just a lot of less headaches.
Involved. Yeah. Make it easy.
Yeah.
Make it easy. So, well, thanks for taking the time and enjoying, and joining me here. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, some pieces of information for for listeners to be able to take and apply, use. Hopefully they never need it, but statistically you're going to at some point. Yeah. So tuck it away in the back of your mind. And when that happens, when there is that water damage, you go, wait a minute, I know what I'm doing. So,
absolutely.
So thank you guys for joining us. If you have questions or if you have topics you want us to cover, feel free to email me at theagentinsider@gmail.com. That's theagentinsider@gmail.com. Until next time, guys, thanks so much and have a great day.